What do you think the main reason pets are getting sicker quicker?
Feed them garbage, pro-inflammatory food, and give them water that's contaminated with all the things, and don't get them outside to exercise. That's a recipe for disaster.
You can take pets and turn pets into pet food?
It's not supposed to happen, but it has in the past. And so for some of these smaller companies, periodically that's an issue that pops up.
In other countries?
No, in the United States. Yes. I mean, this is one of the most...
It's a dirty industry.
Yeah, it is. It truly is.
Why do you believe kibble is worse than fast food?
I mean, there's been several studies that have shown that kibble has some of the highest content of microplastics in all of the processed foods out there.
Oh my gosh.
And this is the most horrifying thing, is that...
Dr. Ruth, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Warren. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, this is going to be a lot of fun. So vet health, right?
Right.
Let's get right at it. Why is traditional veterinarians failing pets?
I think a lot of it is that because veterinary medicine has become so corporatized, veterinarians are now down to a 6 to 12 minute appointment slot. And what they're dealing with is chronic disease. And you can't talk your client through the steps, even if you're coming from a purely conventional aspect, in 12 minutes. The other part is that veterinary medicine got locked up in evidence-based medicine, even though on the human side, we know that less than 11% of evidence-based medicine recommendations are actually substantiated by evidence.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just doing what we've always done because that's the way to do it. And honestly, too, I think there are small inroads coming, like in 2006, I'm talking about leaky gut syndrome, intestinal dysbiosis, and I was a whack job, and this is now mainstream. It's just that medicine changes so slowly. But in the process, our pets are suffering because clients can't get the care that they need, they can't get the information, and the solutions are always pharmaceutical-based instead of looking at the entire picture.
It's really sad. Like, we're looking at functional medicine and the movement that's happening right now, and that same playbook that's making the world sick, especially Americans sick, one of the sickest countries in the world, because we're using toxic medications that should only be used in emergencies to cover symptoms and not get to the root cause. And we took that same playbook on something that can't even choose for itself. At least as an adult, I can choose to take or not take the medicine, but here's an animal that can't choose on its own, and we're choosing for it, and we're giving it, would you agree, poisonous medications in many, many cases.
Absolutely, and what you said earlier, many of these are meant for emergency use only, and thank God for them, right?
Right.
If you've got a kidney infection, antibiotics are going to help you out. That's an emergency situation. But the problem is that these medications meant for short-term use are becoming lifelong usage as early as 2 years of age. So the other big issue is that clients don't know who to trust. They don't quite trust their veterinarian anymore. They're flocking to influencers on social media. Some of them have great information. Some of them really don't, and they're in there to make a buck. And it's difficult for the client, for the pet parent, to make those decisions. Like, is this person the real deal? Are they not the real deal?
Back up 1 second here. You were a traditional vet.
Right.
Doing traditional practices. What's your story? Like, how did you wind up here? How did you become a functional medicine veterinarian, if you will?
I mean, so I woke up January 1st, 2005, realizing I was nothing but a shill for drug companies. And by that time, I'd been eating the standard American diet. It was more than 80 pounds heavier than I am currently. I developed fibromyalgia, IBS. And so this is what makes a doctor either become a better doctor because they want a different solution or completely fail. And I was fortunate enough to have seen many of my clients being diagnosed with fibromyalgia being turned into the junkie. It just was horrible. And this was even before the opioid epidemic. And I knew that's not what I wanted. And so I started looking around. I was fortunate to find a functional medicine doctor in my hometown. And he worked with me, did all of the things in terms of removing toxins, fixing the microbiome, fixing my thyroid, you know, getting things back online to where I could make these lifestyle choices and start to see my health improve over 6 months.
You weren't a pet, but you became your first your first pet functional medicine pet patient.
Right.
And so when you saw that these getting to the root cause of why you didn't feel well, why you had chronic pain, instead of getting on a pain med, and I had fibromyalgia as well, but they, if a dog has pain and is limping, they get them on a pain med.
Right.
And it's not good to keep them. There's tons of side effects.
Right.
So when you discovered that functional medicine and getting to the root cause helped you, was that the turning point?
Exactly. And to be fair, I had started studying a traditional Chinese veterinary medicine, but I'm feeling myself get better. And I'm thinking, why aren't we doing this for dogs and cats? And so that's what I did, is figure out how to adapt some of those protocols and how to create a whole food diet for dogs and cats that would actually nourish them instead of robbing them of their vitality. And that's where the original CrockPet diet was born.
Yeah, I just heard about the CrockPet diet.
Right on.
Yeah.
So the thing is that I got the courage because my dog Nepenthe had bacterial endocarditis, which is a bacterial infection on your heart valve. It is not good. And most dogs die. So we got her stabilized using conventional medicine, took her down with me while we're studying TCBM. My teachers are like, okay, do these acupoints, use these herbs, and start cooking for her. She would not let me put needles in her. She thought the herbs were okay. She thought cooking for her was an outstanding idea. And literally, Warren, I watched on ultrasound as a 1 centimeter lesion on her heart valve disappeared down to 3 millimeters, which is the width of a piece of paper. That's not supposed to happen.
The body's always wanting to heal itself.
Yes.
It's always wanting to protect itself, even with certain types of cancers. Like, it's encapsulating. Like, there's lots of stuff around this, but we think that, oh, there's no hope. But the body's crying to heal itself. And once you give it, remove the interference or give it the nutrients that it needs, it will heal. And that's what's nice. But here's the question, that dogs and cats are, I think there's this belief that they're more resilient because they're an animal, right? But they get sicker quicker, in my opinion.
Yes.
But they heal faster as well.
Right.
So you get to see miracles in your clinic and see pets that were essentially had the death sentence.
Yes.
That are now able to restore their health and become that, essentially a caregiver to a family.
And that's it. I mean, and this is a whole nother topic, but part of what makes pets sick, aside from all of the things we talk about all the time, is that they're buffering our emotional state. Mm-hmm. And we're stressed to the gills. And so if we stay in that sympathetic state, that fight or flight state all the time, so are they. And so if we can help bring ourselves down, they come down, they can start to heal, we can start to heal. And as a family, we can start to shift the whole experience from one of battling health conditions to one of remembering how to get back to health.
I love that. Like, in animals are, that's why people love them so much. I mean, and at some level, they're taking on our abuse. They're taking on our cares and our worries and our fears. They can feel. Horses can feel.
Like, yes.
We stopped believing in energy medicine, you know, in America, and replaced it with, you know, oil-based foods, oil-based medicines, oil-based shampoos and products that are 50% oil-based. Like, oil-based, and then guess what we have for the pets?
Right.
Oil-based shampoos, oil-based medications, oil-based toys, plastics, and chemicals.
Right.
That are causing inflammation and disease. So this, our economy is oil-based, right? So it's infiltrated our food, the pesticides, the herbicides, and we're not in symbiotic relationship with chemicals.
No.
We're in symbiotic relationship with healthy bacteria. We're in symbiotic relationship with the sunshine. And that's why our dogs, our pets need to be grounded. They need to be in their sunshine. They need to drink clean water. They need to eat nutritious foods. And we've turned it into fast food pets.
Worse than fast food.
Why do you believe kibble is worse than fast food?
NOVA food classification system, right? Unprocessed, minimally processed, processed, ultra processed. all kibble, if you work it into that classification system, is ultra-processed. So not only is the food quality going in, it's super high, highly processed carbohydrates, which are going to be pro-inflammatory, create massive glycemic spikes. Then you bake this stuff, roll it through an extruder at super high temperatures, you're creating AGEs, ALEs, all of the things that we worry about.
Carcinogens.
Yes. And all these Maillard reaction proteins. And then you pour this into a plastic-lined bag, which, you know, may sit in a warehouse for 3 to 6 months if you're lucky, maybe close to a year, depending on how well it sells. And so that heat, if it's not well stored, is just further pushing all of the micro and nanoplastics from that plastic liner into the food itself. I mean, there's been several studies that have shown that kibble has some of the highest content of microplastics in all of the processed foods out there.
Oh my gosh. I mean, if someone's listening to this and wondering why they're losing their pet friends, their pet family, their loved pets so quickly, and the suffering, and, you know, and pets are only here for a short amount of time, and they could be with you for a lot longer.
Yes.
But, you know, maybe 10, 12 years, what used to be 15, 20 years. And it's super sad, and the pet suffers, you suffer, and it's almost like being on the medical treadmill. So it's not only living healthy, it's not even living long, but even healthy years.
And this is the most horrifying thing, is that they're getting sick at 2, at 3, at 4, when they should be in the prime of their lives. Like, there's a reclassification on, you know, pet comparing dog age, cat age to human age. And so really, until they're 6 or 7, they're our age, right? They're in their 50s, 60s. So where they should be in the prime of their lives in terms of vitality, health, they aren't. They're coming out of the box sick. And it's just heartbreaking.
Why is dog and cat kibble worse than fast food?
It is just chock full of all of the carcinogens, advanced glycation end products, advanced liposomal end products, Maillard reaction proteins. It is full of inferior quality feed stuffs, and that's the distinction most people don't make. There's pet food, but truly it is feed, and it's just not biologically appropriate for them. If the way I like to compare it is that if you made a steady diet of Doritos, you could survive, but you're not going to thrive. And that's essentially what we're feeding our pets, is corn product.
So we're giving them Doritos without the red dust flavoring.
The red dust. Yeah, the super duper lime chipotle and the scary, frightening red stuff that comes off on your hands. So that's not in there. But so they're making the kibble, and then they spray it with things like cadaverine, which sounds as awful as it's horrible.
What's cadaverine?
So it's basically when fats start to rot, mm-hmm. Cadaverine is a molecule that gets produced, from rotting fat. And so basically they spray the top of the kibble with this because it's a palatant for dogs and cats.
They're using rotting fat. So oxidized, pro-inflammatory,
chock full of ALEs, just horrific stuff. And this is what is the palatant for most pet food.
So it's probably a waste product that they decided, hey, how can we get rid of this waste product? Let's put it on pet kibble, and so we don't have to throw it away and make some money off of it.
There's good quality kibbles out there, mm-hmm. although I wouldn't recommend it. But the vast majority of the pet food industry is upcycling. Okay, we can't use this on the human side. The 4D animals that should not have even gone to the slaughterhouse, they end up in pet food. For a while, there was a problem with xylazine, which is an anesthetic agent contaminating pet food, because these are animals that should have never been anywhere near a slaughterhouse that are now getting turned into a pet food. That's just craziness.
What type of, is it like cows? Is it
right?
Pigs? What is it?
All of that. So any of the commercially produced animal proteins in this country, mm-hmm. there are supposed to be guidelines saying that this animal is sick and it should not enter the food system. But they push them through. And so there's food inspection, but the last stats I read is a veterinarian is responsible for 11,000 chickens a minute, something like 200 pigs a minute, 150 cows a minute. There's no way that they can actually have the time and the ability to say, this is a sick animal. No.
So they're taking sick, diseased, medicated animals.
Yeah.
And giving it to our pets.
The four D's, dead, diseased, dying, or dead. You know, it's just bad news. You know, and this has not been a problem for a bit, but there have been situations where euthanized dogs and cats are being turned into pet food. And so now here they are, they've got phenobarbital on board to affect the euthanasia, and that's getting put into the food.
You can take pets and turn pets into pet food?
It's not supposed to happen, but it has in the past. And so for some of these smaller companies, periodically that's an issue that pops up.
In other countries?
In the United States. Yes. So, I mean, this is one of the most...
It's a dirty industry.
Yeah, it is. It truly is. And its governing board is AFCO, American Association of Feed Control Officials. And it's an industry group. So we're asking industry to police themselves. That doesn't work well.
No, it's not going to work well because it's, you know, it's going to cut into their bottom line, cut into their profits. And yeah, that's not good.
No.
What do you think the main reason pets are getting sicker quicker?
There's a myriad of reasons, but honestly, I believe it's because we are removing their gonads. We're spaying and neutering as early as 8 weeks of age. Mm-hmm. And they are never having the opportunity to become endocrine competent. So what happens is we're having these animals that never mature physically. They never mature mentally, emotionally, et cetera. And they have altered biochemistry because luteinizing hormone levels shoot up, tissues that shouldn't have receptors develop them, and take in this luteinizing hormone, and it just creates havoc in the body. So when you take that on top of the toxic burden that pets are experiencing, mm-hmm. which is anywhere from 3 to 90 times hours, and feed them garbage, pro-inflammatory food, and give them water that's contaminated with all the things, and don't get them outside to exercise, that's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, they're completely removed from nature, giving them chemicals and not real food. There's no way they're gonna thrive.
It's really tough on them. Yeah, yeah. It's incredible.
Yeah, they weren't, I mean, most of them, well, all animals, including us, because we're animals, we're meant to be outside in nature, grounding with sunshine, you know, chewing on certain things, you know.
Yeah. I mean, experiencing your environment.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, having a connection to the earth and to the planet, and you take that away and you put them inside where there isn't adequate sunshine, there is no grounding in nasty electric fields, like all the things that would affect us health-wise,
right.
It's in the literature. It's going to, you know, like you said, 3 to 90 times affect them, electric fields, magnetic fields.
Yes.
Like all those things. I've had friends who've had their pets were sleeping on pet beds that were bad, near bad wiring, like laying right on top of it, and a magnetic field dissipate, you know, over several feet. But that nasty field close up with bad wiring, and you're not allowed to have bad wiring in house. That's why they check for it, because they put out these magnetic fields and electric fields, but in particular magnetic fields that cause cancer.
Right.
So I just did a docuseries on that at Homesick Home, and the way they found that they had bad wiring in their home is what both of their pets, they had their pet bed, they moved their pet bed, and it was over some bad wiring, and both the dogs, they're, and these were, you know, eating all the healthy diet. This
all
is a very wealthy family, doing everything right, outside, playing, all the love, raw food diet, like all the stuff, and they both died of cancer within months of each other, or even weeks. And it was because of the magnetic field. That's how quickly they got stage 4 cancer. So it's crazy how sensitive these animals are. I mean, maybe it's because dogs are more in tune with frequency as well, but they're small.
People that buy these smart plugs that you can turn on remotely with your phone, mm-hmm. numerous people have said, oh my gosh, my dog just started acting like a nutball for no reason, just running around panicked. And finally narrowed it down to these smart plugs. And they're like, oh, I flip it off and he's cool. But this is, we forget this, not only for ourselves, but also for our animals. We are magnetic beings. We are on a magnetic planet. And if we alter that magnetic flow, we're going to screw up the biochemistry and systems we don't even understand yet.
No, we don't understand. This is what controls birds flying around the world and butterflies and like all this stuff. And we're like, oh, it doesn't matter. And then a plug like that puts out a nasty magnetic field, an electric field, but also a magnetic field that the dog can feel.
Yes.
Like it's not woo-woo medicine. Like we need to wake up to these fields matter. They affect our sleep. They affect our energy. And, you know, it's like a bad movie where, you know, birds start flying to the in the wrong direction,
right?
You know, and start falling out of the sky because of we've broken the magnetic. You've seen the movies where if something's happening wrong with the earth and we're losing our magnetic field, birds are falling out of the sky because they're being directed incorrectly because these magnetic fields have been proven to. That's a great analogy, is what I'm saying.
Right. So, I mean, basically, we're messing up their guidance systems.
Yeah.
And when we do that, everything else goes off kilter.
Yeah. Does dogs have guidance systems?
Well, that's an interesting question.
Yeah.
And that's a whole nother bag of wax. But I think so. I think that left to their own devices, they will figure out the best situation for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, honestly, they're trying to pull us into better situations. I have a dear friend who, if it's his dog's time, like he's got a dedicated time to Gus, if he is not respecting that and got his phone in airplane mode, Gus is like, dude, he's knocking him with his nose and reminding him that he is supposed to be present for this time.
How smart are dogs, like relative to a human age? And it's different types of intelligence.
Yeah, so I think that's it. In terms of the way we judge intelligence for us is like, how many words mm-hmm. do you, how well read are you, all of that. But they have a more of an innate intelligence. They know they've got it made. They're protected. They're no longer a prey species. They don't have to be predators unless they're feral. And that's what they're here to do, is teach us to be in joy.
Yeah, they're special little gifts, aren't they?
Yeah.
The reason I don't have dogs is timing and travel. And it's a huge responsibility. And I already have three kids. But it could add a lot of value, but I'm still like in that place, you know, because I'm going to wind up taking care of almost.
And that's it.
Yeah. So, cause kids, don't have their frontal lobe developed yet. And so the ultimate responsibility, it's like anything else. There is, there's unintended consequences to decisions. And just if you make an emotional decision and get a family pet because your kid wants them, you have to know that it's ultimately going to fall on you to make sure that pet's well taken care of, because they deserve it, or don't get an animal. So I got two feral cats, and it has been life transforming for my middle daughter. She is in love with those cats. Like, we've been in tears. I've actually been in tears. Remember, I was texting you because the one was very sick. I'm trying to catch it, get it to the vet. I can't because it's feral. I got bit. I got scratched. I was doing everything I had. My daughter's in my arms. And the cat was amazing.
Yeah.
It turned around. The next day it was fine. I'm like, ugh. And my neighbor's saying it's probably going to die. And she was my neighbor's daughter's a vet tech. And I'm trying to get like, do you have the gloves so that I can grab this cat and get it to the vet?
But I mean, that's interesting too, right? Because in the veterinary world, we're like, without us, the cat's going to die. Now the cat really has the capability to heal itself. And we're useful when it's beyond that capability.
Yeah.
But it's just, I mean, cats are such amazing creatures because they are like, this is not good for me. I'm going, see ya. Or this is great for me. I love this. Thank you. I would like some more. And so that's a valuable lesson, because so many of us spend our lives just grinding away and never taking time to enjoy the small bits in life. Cats are great teachers on that one.
They are great. They love, they use everyone and everything around.
It's just like, you're mine.
Yeah, it's crazy. They won't let me pet them at certain times, but when they want something, they're rubbing all over me. They'll let them pet because they want food.
Yeah.
So they're survivors, man.
They are. And they're master manipulators.
Masters. They have my middle daughter wrapped. You know, and they're relentless. Like when they want food, they will meow, meow, meow. And people like someone like a worker's at my house and the cats are bothering them and they're getting water and food from me. I'm like, what are you doing? They're just like, well, they keep bothering me. And I'm like, well,
yeah,
it's not, these are outside cats. They don't need to overfeed them. What do you believe the biggest lie pet parents are being told right now?
What passes as preventive medicine and veterinary medicine. And in traditional veterinary medicine, preventive is vaccines, heartworm prevention, flea control, that they now have a 12-month injection of a pesticide.
Which is carcinogenic.
Amongst other things. Yeah. I mean, you know, talk about, let's
you
just...
You want to give a mouse cancer for a cancer study? You inject the pesticide.
Yeah. So we have these... It's just so incredibly frustrating because the goal with all of these from the pharma is... client compliance. So if we give your dog a 12-month injection, you're compliant for the year. But that's not helping the dog. So the biggest lie is what is passing for preventive medicine, which is actually creating more disease.
So the preventative medicine in the pet industry is causing more disease, not preventing it.
Correct.
Like?
Over-vaccination. Overutilization of pesticides, overutilization of pharmaceuticals, spaying and neutering at 8 weeks of age, feed only this bag of prescription diet. You know, all of the traditional recommendations, these are products that are pro-inflammatory at best and pro-carcinogenic at worst, and all of the things in between in terms of autoimmune disease, IBS, cognitive problems, anxiety, et cetera, et cetera. So we've created the disaster that we're currently living through with our pets.
So just because it's veterinarian approved doesn't mean it's healthy for your pet.
That's right. This is the problem, is that just like medical schools, who's funding veterinary education? Big pet food, big pharma. It's not for the pets. It's for the bottom line.
So they're part... veterinarians are cogs in the wheel of a money machine surrounded by, again, companies, medications, big food, big pharma.
Big pharma.
Yeah, and, big ag.
And the thing is that veterinarians entered this profession with their hearts full of intent for caring for pets. And because of the education process, they've ended up someplace completely different. So, if you've got a local vet, be kind to them. They are suffering right now. And
they have to see it.
So here's the difficulty, right? If you're in the middle of it, you see it. You see it's not working, but how do you get out of it? And many of these young veterinarians are coming out of veterinary school with debt somewhere between $250,000 and $400,000. So what do they have to do? They have to jump on humping those bills to make their lives work. And it is, you know, and then you couple with that with the fact that they're seeing 40, 60 patients a day, and they're being asked to produce at a certain dollar volume, they can't see their way out of the weeds.
And when you're so busy and you're in sympathetic fight or flight, you don't have time to get back in your heart, which is the reason you probably became a vet. You have
Yes.
a sensitive, kind heart for animals. You love animals. They put you in your parasympathetic. They helped you relax and connect to nature and to God and to yourself. And then you take on a job that puts you into your sympathetic, long hours, late nights, and you become numb, potentially, to feel the very, I mean, maybe not, because, I mean, vets are just, they are loving. They love animals. I mean, it's beautiful.
So, I mean, what you just described is what brought me to that January 1st morning, waking up hungover because I'm drinking to medicate myself because what I am doing is not what I'm meant to do. I am creating harm instead of creating health. And so I had the blessing and the courage to find another way. But so many of my colleagues, especially the young colleagues, they can't even get the headspace to look above where they are.
Yeah.
To see where they are in the big picture.
Yeah. Yeah. But this podcast is going to help because we're going to share it with them. We're going to encourage them. and to remind them that we're doing this for the pet and it's in the pet's best interest and we can create change. We're doing it in our healthcare. We're doing it with toxicity. We can stand up, putting synthetic chemicals that this is science. We can all agree on this.
Yes.
It's not just humankind, it's pet kind that is suffering because of our poor decision making. And there is a way out. We can get back to farms in regenerative ways. We can getting back into balance with nature, because nature begets more nature. Like if you raise cows properly, it helps the soil. It produces more vegetation, which helps the CO2 levels and everything. We're doing everything out of balance because we're destroying the systems that create balance. We're destroying the microbiome of the soil, right? Which is destroying the microbiome of humanity, which is destroying the microbiome of the air,
of the entire planet.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And that's precisely it. We can get into overwhelm about all the things that are absolutely terrifying, or we can take a deep breath and say, what change can I make today? What one thing can I do to help my dog feel better? Mm-hmm. What one thing can I do to help my cat feel better? And honestly, it's turn your phone off, put that bugger into airplane mode, and go outside and sit on the ground with them.
It's good for both of you.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's I've seen studies where a human it's like some sort of photography, but when a dog's around you, your aura grows. It amplifies your aura. It amplifies your energy, chakras, if you will.
Well, and even if you go back to the research by the HeartMath people, if you're healthy and everything is working well, your energetic field is 15 feet out from your heart. If you're lumpy and things are not so good, your dog comes in, you're hanging out together, you go into coherence, and then your energetic field expands exponentially because your dog, your cat, is helping you come back into parasympathetic rest and digest state.
That's why pets help you live longer.
Yes.
Yeah, so this all makes sense because the rest and relaxation that we need, like it's hard to get unless you do breath work or different things like that or have some sort of routine, the dogs and cats will put that routine in your life. So
yes,
they are a beautiful addition to family. Now,
yes.
Think about a smaller dog, something that can go with me.
There you go. That's it. So our dog is, Hayo is 7 pounds, and so she can go on the plane with us wherever we're traveling. And she is a bomb-proof travel dog. And she brings so much joy, not just to us, but to everybody around us. Yeah.
Yeah. They're magnets for love. They're
like, oh, you puppy.
Like even me, I'm slightly allergic and I just can't help myself. I'm when I'm going walks and dogs, they sense, they come to me. I'm like, dang it. You know that I'm a little bit allergic, but I just can't help myself.
Exactly. You just got to get down there and give them a good wallop.
Yeah, you do. And just go wash my hands and touch my eyes. I'll be fine.
Yep.
What's the number one toxin in a household that's destroying pet health?
Honestly, it's cleaning products and all of these artificial scents. This stuff, they're volatile organic compounds. They're released into the air. They go up. They come back down attached to dust particles. And your pet is breathing them, ingesting them, wallowing in them, absorbing them through their skin.
So all these cleaning products, which are hormone disruptive, which are carcinogenic, those particles are, it's not just when you wipe a counter and spray it, the chemical's still there. Like it doesn't disappear.
Right.
Or if it volatilizes.
Right.
It'll grab onto little rafts called dust or microplastics.
Yes.
And even worse. And then drop to the floor. If you're not vacuuming, if you don't have air filters, that's getting inside their pet. So that just bioaccumulates in the pet and causes will be linked to disease.
Exactly.
That's super sad.
Horrifying.
So alternative would be just use vinegar.
Yeah, vinegar and water. It's super awesome. Vinegar, water, baking soda. You can clean anything with those three things.
Your whole house.
Yeah.
Literally. And you can, and there's laundry products. There's a lot of, safe companies out there, Truly Free being one of them. So many now. Like, it's just endless, the different decisions. Or you can make your own.
Yes.
And vinegar and baking soda is going to do 90% of the work in your home.
Agreed.
Yeah, it's crazy. If someone wanted to prove their pet health tonight, what would you tell them to do?
Get a water filter.
Yeah.
That's step one. Our water is so unclean and it is transmitting all of the microplastics, the herbicides, the pesticides, the PFASs, all of these things. So if our goal in detoxification is to help unload what's in the pet's body, it works a whole lot better if we don't put it in to start with.
That's beautiful. And really, because that's something they're drinking. Dogs and cats drink tons of water, and that small amounts of toxins build up in their tissues. Pharmaceutical drugs, or, you know, obviously pesticides, glyphosates even showing up in our drinking water.
Yes.
And then human, small doses of hormone disrupting, you're drinking someone else's Paxil, someone else's heart med, you're at low doses because the sewer treatment plants just aren't able to put that stuff out. It's being dumped back into our rivers, which is sucking back into the water table. And then we put a well in the ground near the river and it pulls it right back into our water supply.
Right.
And right back into us, right back into our pets. And then we keep cycling all these drugs that just don't break down in the environment. Forever drugs, if you will.
They are. And so this is the hydrogeologic cycle, right? Mm-hmm. We're having the water goes up, it evaporates, it goes into the clouds rain, and starts the whole process over again. But and this honestly is why children born today have DDT in their cord blood. This is a pesticide that was banned in 1968.
It's not gone yet.
No.
It's so sad.
It is.
What is the sickest pet you were able to help with natural methods and have that turn around?
There's been so many. But the dog that sticks out in my mind, 10-year-old Border Collie mix. Mm-hmm. Been diagnosed with kidney disease at the age of 2, mm-hmm. and put on the solution veterinary medicine is to put them on a low protein diet. Mm-hmm. All right, now you have a 2-year-old dog that's neutered that's going to start losing muscle mass because he has no testosterone on board on a low protein diet. So this dog at the age of 10 had a completely burnout coat, had IBS, had hip dysplasia, you know, all sorts of joint issues because he simply didn't have the muscle mass to support mobility.
So sad.
Horrifying. And so his mom finally was like, I'm done. I've had it. I've been doing everything y'all said, and this dog is getting sicker and sicker and sicker. So we started this guy on a special recipe of the original Croc Pet diet and a few other bits and pieces, did a little acupuncture. He comes back in 2 weeks. I don't even recognize this dog because his coat is now black and glistening, and he feels good, and he's able to stand up without taking 30 seconds mm-hmm. to wobble himself up.
Aww.
I mean, and that's in 2 weeks, just with food.
And then thousands of dollars at the vet because it's expensive.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then it puts people out financially because they love their pets so much, and they're not even getting solutions. They're just running to the vet late, you know, late nights, emergency pet visits. And if we just fed and cared for our dogs naturally as they were intended, and dogs and cats and other pets,
right?
Our wallets would be lighter.
No, well, I mean, that's it.
Heavier,
yeah. And but here's the problem, right? Because they're going to the vet, there's a massive problem, and the solutions they're getting are, it's $10,000 or euthanasia. That's insanity.
That is insanity.
And
who has $10,000?
And the difficulty is they're being pressured into the euthanasia part, not mm-hmm. even giving pain meds to, like, here, let me buy you a little time, or whatever it is that could palliate the symptomatology long enough for that pet parent to make a coherent decision. So the difficulty for many pet parents is saying, let me think about that. Because they don't know what to do next.
Yeah. It's almost like you're at a hospital saying, if you don't do this medication, you're going to die, or whatever. It's
right.
It's almost like a pressure technique.
It is. It is. And the you know, it's not quite as bad where you have to, what is it in the human side, where you have to sign something saying you realize that you're going to kill yourself if you don't follow the doctor's instructions. We're not to that point in veterinary medicine. But when pet parents say, I need to think about this, can you give me something to help this guy feel better? They're getting pushback on that. But here's the beautiful thing. We had one of my coaches had a pet parent. The dog had has intestinal lymphoma. And the vet said, basically, you got 3 months with or without chemotherapy. They decided to do chemotherapy. The first dose just put the dog down and just wiped it out.
Yeah.
So they called Sunny, and Sunny's like, okay. So she pulled together a diet plan for this dog. And this dog is a Cane Corso, so big guy, supposed to be out 85 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
She was down to 40.
Oh, my gosh.
So just in horrible shape.
Ribs,
exactly. Yeah. So she puts together a diet plan, chooses some Chinese herbals and a couple of other supplements. And in a month, this dog had gained all of its weight back. It's playing. She's happy. They take the dog to the vet, and the vet's like, is this the same dog? And they're like, yes. Mm. And they tell her what they've done, and she looks at him and says, well, she must have been misdiagnosed.
Just no self-responsibility, no belief in the ability of an animal to heal without a medication. It's kind of crazy. It's scary.
Well, and just by supporting the basic mechanisms. If you don't start with food, if you don't support the microbiome, if you don't control inflammation, if you don't help the body detoxify,
mm-hmm.
yes, that is the trajectory that will be followed. But if you do those things, I'm not saying this dog isn't going to die of cancer in the next 6 months,
mm-hmm.
but in the meantime, she's having an outstanding quality of life. She's happy. She's playing. Her parents are happy because mm-hmm. they have their dog back.
Humans are the same way. They'll choose not to get on chemo because getting chemo will destroy the quality of their life. So they said, I'd rather not do the chemo because I'm not really going to live any longer anyway.
Yeah.
You know, there's maybe a 1% chance you live a little longer, but you're going to, or whatever the percentage is, but you're going to suffer. And there's studies that they can look at to make that informed decision.
Right.
Probably not happening when it comes to pets. I don't know if pet parents understand that as much.
No, and it's hard, right? Because you, in that situation, many pet parents are absolutely pressured into one of the two choices, either euthanasia or drop the 10 or 20 grand to do whatever it is.
Yes. And that's just... And chemo drugs are so inexpensive to make, yet they charge so much for them.
Yeah. And that's it. I mean, chemo has its place mm-hmm. in some situations,
In some stats, it can extend life.
Yes.
It's actually rare.
Yes. Yeah. But this is the thing.
Yeah.
It's like getting the breath and the space to take a moment to make that decision. Mm-hmm. That's not what either system is good for doing.
Yeah, you can't react emotionally. When emotion is high, intellect is low.
Yep.
So you do need to be in a rest and relaxed state to make good decision making, and that's always true.
Yeah.
You know, what supplements should every pet be on?
Well, I mean, first of all, put all your money into food first.
Amen to that.
Yeah. I mean, supplements are just exactly that, supplements.
Mm-hmm.
And they're meant to supplement a high-quality diet. I think probiotics are absolutely necessary because number one, the gut is the number two detox organ.
Mm-hmm.
And if so, it's not working, then nothing else is going to work well. And then the other issue is that, again, if pets are somewhere between 3 and 90 times our toxic burden, their guts are getting whacked on a daily basis because they're grooming this stuff off of themselves. So probiotics are essential. Some sort of an omega-3 fatty acid supplement mm-hmm. is essential. Most conventional pet foods are upwards of 30 to 1 in terms of an omega-6 mm-hmm. to omega-3 ratio. Omega-6s are required, but at that level, they're very pro-inflammatory.
They sure are, yeah.
So you have to shift the balance.
Back to like a 4-to-1 ratio.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And or even 1-to-1. But I mean, 4-to-1, yeah. I think that's optimal for all species. And then the last thing is, I honestly believe in multivitamins and minerals, because if you are in a state of chronic stress, you're burning through B vitamins like water.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, if you're feeding a commercial diet, it's been documented that after 6 weeks, the stated levels of nutrients are declining rapidly, particularly in terms of B vitamins.
Because it's anti-nutrients.
Right.
Like a lot of those.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even if the oxalates can be anti-nutrients, if they're grinding up and putting kale in there, which dogs really aren't meant to eat kale.
I would disagree with that. I think that the whole raw thing as being the ancestral diet, I don't think is correct. So if we look at when dogs evolved from mm-hmm. wolves, that's roughly 30 to 40,000 years ago, depending on who's talking. We were already cooking. And in fact, we were baking bread 30,000 years ago. So they evolved first of all, eating her poop, which is why our microbiomes are more similar than people understand, right? And eating our garbage. And then as they came in to our pack, literally, they ate what our leftovers were. And then finally, what we're feeding them. And the problem is that what we've been feeding them over the last 50 years is horrifying.
It is horrifying.
Yeah.
So so dogs' microbiome are similar to our microbiome.
Yes.
Because they're eating our microbiome.
We have co-evolved. And so literally they started eating our poop. And then we, like in the house, in the family, if somebody has an aberrant problem with their microbiome, that's going to share amongst the family to some degree. Same thing with their dogs, right? Yeah. If somebody comes down with some evil bacteria, that has the potential to shed through the entire household.
That's amazing. But the dog is really good for the microbiome of the home. If you're not spraying pesticides and herbicides outside your home, so that's one of the more dangerous. If you have a pet, don't use Roundup, or they got rid of glyphosate, but all the other toxic Alzheimer's causing chemicals that are inside of there, and your pet's going to be more sensitive to it. The insecticides, because they're going to, one, it's going to poison them because of their bodies, and they're smaller and cause disease more quickly. And two, they're going to drag it into your home.
Yes.
Or if you have a natural outdoors and garden, you're not spraying, you're not putting, this is on your grass, like weed and feed is toxic.
Yes.
They have carcinogenic and neurological disruptive chemicals that they're going to bring into your dust load. They're going to be licking their paws and getting it in their body. If you have young children, that's going to get in their body. They're going to bring that toxic dust into your home. They're not taking their shoes off.
No.
Right? And you might not be either.
Yes.
And you're dragging that in. You know, that's why you should always take your shoes off when you go from walking around outside.
Agreed.
And so it's hard on the animals, hard on you, and it's benefiting the home microbiome. If the opposite is true, if you have a natural outdoors and garden and grass, the dogs are going to bring in good soil-based organisms that your body needs.
Right.
And create a good, healthy microbiome in your home, because you have a home biome, right? Our feet of a family are all going to be the same bacteria, because that's where we walk. That's the only thing that's the same.
Yes.
But my microbiome is different everywhere else in my body, but our feet are the same because it's the floor.
In contact with the surface.
And we all share that microbiome.
Right on.
And all those chemicals.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the thing. If you live near a golf course, don't walk your dog on the golf course.
Yeah.
If you do, please, please, please wipe them down. So anywhere you can see weeds growing in the grass, that's the place to be with your dog.
Yeah. And I don't let my kids walk on nice grass or whatever. I'm like, my daughter, I pull them off.
Yeah.
And they want to walk there. Like if we're on a walk outside, I'm like, they try to walk on a yard that's been sprayed and I yank her off. Because not only is that going to get her, because I have three daughters, but that if they wear the shoes just inside, even we take them off, it's still pulling those toxins into the home. I'm very cognizant of that. And dogs, same thing.
Right.
If they're going to let them go pee somewhere, make sure they pee on the natural grass or the, you know, somewhere where it's not a perfect, plus it will kill someone's grass.
The scruffy stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and that's it. I mean, so ideally for dogs, every time you go out for a walk, have a damp hand towel sitting at the door for when you come back. Wipe your entire dog down and its feet and just take that stuff off before you even cross the threshold.
That's so easy to do.
Yeah.
It takes a few minutes.
That's it.
You can leave it right there and last for a couple of days and then change it out. It's part of the responsibility of for you and for the pet. So probiotics. This is Humerian, soil, really powerful, number one, like one of the number one on Amazon. So they're one of the sponsors of this show. I wanted to give them a shout out. So really high quality probiotics, proven to get into the small intestine. They, you know, because acid kills probiotics. That doesn't happen with these probiotics. So that's pretty cool. And then you also told me, as far as supplements, I don't know if we can talk about this or not, but you used my patented zeolite.
Yeah. So the cytodetox is super easy for pets because we're able to use such a small volume.
I just found that out today.
I know.
Yes. I didn't even know you were doing this.
Yeah. No, it's awesome because, especially for cats, it's glycerin based. And so it's got that little sweet taste. Cats are actually sugar addicts. if they let get run wild because of the way we've been feeding them. But it's an easy, easy solution to help your pet detox and have something that you know is clean going in. It's not going to bring other toxins in with it, and it's going to pull out all of the bad stuff, not only herbicides, pesticides, but also heavy metals, all of the things that are difficult to get adhered to some other products. So it's a super easy product to use for pets, very safe. Amazing.
Yeah, I didn't even know you were doing that. Supports your pet's natural ability to detoxify.
That's it. That's it. Yeah.
Because they do have an ability, and we're just giving them a little helping hand. And that's it blesses me to know that, you know, it's helping your pet families and pet friends. And it's really cool. I didn't even ever think about it. Like, it's so, you know, I get locked into natural health and helping individuals remove, first of all, like remove, like you said, with food. You have to start with the major things. And the major things when it comes to human health is removing the toxins that you're being exposed to. Let's lower that load, because your body has this amazing ability, yes, to detoxify, naturally detoxify. So if you remove the sources of toxicity, same with our pets. And the biggest source seems to be food. And then we have supplements that actually work, you know.
That's helpful.
And this, like a lot of supplements, they're full of poisons. They're full of natural artificial flavors, wheat germ, you know, like things that really don't belong in pet products. You read it and you're like, oh my gosh, like I wouldn't eat this. If you wouldn't eat it, don't give it to your pet.
Yeah. And I think that's what's critical. Like the supplement industry, especially on the pet side, is what they're after is palatability. And all of the things that enhance palatability to get your dog to eat it, your cat to eat it, are usually really yucky things. So that's why when I use a supplement, when I create a supplement, I try to have just the active ingredients that are going to be important. And then if I need to figure out how to make it taste better, then use some actual food.
Use some food.
Yeah. But that's why, I mean...
But it costs more, and it lowers the... It raises the price point and decreases profits.
Well, that's it. And so you can buy all sorts of probiotic chews on the market, and mm-hmm. mostly what you're buying is flaxseed.
So tell me about that. Like, what does that mean?
So if you look at most of the chews on the market, in order to get them to form into a chew,
yeah.
you have to have things that will keep it squished together. And often it's flaxseed, and then they'll put some sort of sweetener there. It's gotten a bit better. It used to be propylene glycol. And then that was years ago. I mean, yeah, all of the bad stuff.
That's true. I've seen that.
Yeah, all the bad stuff on the human side gets shuffled down to the pet industry until pet parents say, no, I'm buying this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's the crucial thing. It's like, look at the supplement, and it'll list, if it's good, it'll list the individual ingredients and give you an idea. Some folks go with proprietary, and I get that too, because we want to keep our products intact and high quality. But if what you're seeing is flaxseed, oatmeal, fillers, wheat germ, you know, all the stuff, that's not going to be a good game plan for your pet. Because one of the things that we're fighting left, right, and center is leaky gut or intestinal dysbiosis. And so if you throw things in there that are going to alter the microbiome, boom, all of the work you've just been doing is just shot.
So the pet chews that have probiotics in them, they're kind of canceling each other out. It's not a good pet probiotic.
Right. And often those are the ones that also have all of these digestive enzymes put in there. And really what they're doing is marketing to you, the pet parent. You know a few of the words that you're looking for, and you look at the product and say, oh, it has X, Y, and Z. Super, I'll buy it. But what you have not learned yet, and I hope you have now, is that you need to read the ingredients. And if you have a picky pet, then buy something that you can deliver the smallest possible dose of the actual active ingredient and hide that in food. Hide that in liver. Hide it in salmon pate.
Yeah.
There's a myriad of things you can do to have a wise investment and a hugely more efficacious product.
I love that. That's why I love Humarians. 10 times the absorbability. The bugs don't die in as much in the gut.
Right. Know? So here's the other interesting thing. So this is designed to get through the stomach acid.
Yes.
And so the deal with raw food, I'm going to take us back there for a second,
okay,
is that we love it because it has all of these enzymes and a healthy microbiome of the meat.
Mm-hmm.
What does stomach acid do to bugs?
Kills it.
What does stomach acid do to protein?
Breaks it down.
So all of these things that have been promoted by the raw food industry aren't actually happening.
Ah, yeah, because especially the dog stomachs.
Yeah.
So they're just going to wipe out the raw food anyway. And that's what I mean, like raw, like if you give a dog, a lot of food is more nutritious if
right.
you steam it and cook it.
Right, because you can access the nutrients.
Because yeah, I don't buy the oxalate thing. Like I'm not like everyone's, like functional medicine doctors always say, well, don't eat those tomatoes, they have oxalates. Like, yeah, maybe if you're an over, you know, if your genetics are off or you eat way too many raw things, but I steam all my vegetables.
Right on.
Or you can freeze them. Or,
yes.
you know, there's lots of ways to break that down so that you have much less anti-nutrients, but you're getting all the antioxidants, the flavonoids, like all these things that you need. You can't live with, I mean, it's so important for the pet.
It
and
is.
It's so important for you.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the polyphenols, so they're eating the rainbow. The polyphenols mm-hmm. aren't to nourish us. They're to nourish your microbiome. And it's the same thing. Dogs and cats need this as well. They don't need the vegetable. Cats in particular, obligate carnivores, they don't need a ton of vegetable matter. Mm-hmm. But they need some because...
And that's why they eat grass.
And, you know, and if they're hunters and they're eating the guts of whatever's there. I mean,
I had
a cat that loved everything. He loved cantaloupe. He loved tomatoes.
I had my feral cat just caught an animal and all was left was the tail.
Yeah, that's
like,
it. Yeah.
I'm like, oh, what are you doing? It's gone.
Well, but that's the thing. I mean, so that's cats doing their cat thing, right?
Yeah.
But this is where I think raw feeding is missing the boat. And,
yeah.
and it's interesting.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That's a good argument, I'd have to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even in the human raw, you know, side of things. And I do like raw vegetables, like from the garden, the tomatoes and
right.
carrots. And
right on.
And I try not to wash them because I have regenerative soil. I want to get some of those soil-based organisms.
Right on.
But we're kind of getting off track.
Oh,
so this,
shocking.
Shocking. So this was a wonderful conversation. I've learned so much from you. I can't wait to have you back on the show. And if there's one final statement you want to make to all those pet parents out there, what would it be?
Trust yourself.
Yeah.
You know when the advice you're getting is not quite right. And give yourself the grace of taking a breath before you make a decision.
Yeah, that's great advice. So share this with all your pet friends and other pet parents out there. This is an amazing, I mean, my eyes have been, you've just been blown away with the information you share. So make sure you share this podcast with others. How can folks find you,
Dr. Super Ruth? Easy, drruthroberts.com.
Dr. Ruth Roberts, what a great name, by the way.
Super.
Yeah. Dr. Ruth, has it made you famous? It's called Culture Code.
Yeah.
drruthroberts.com. Go check out her website and the things she has to offer. I'm sure there's tons of free information there for people to learn.
There is.
How to take care of their pet friends so much more and have them live longer, healthier lives. Thanks again.
My pleasure.